season 3, episode 9.
Sorry, Wong Suspect.
Slightly racist, but amazing pun.
Yeah.
By NYPD Blue.
And a good character.
Yes, absolutely. It opens up on Abbandando and Medavoy having a conversation, because Medavoy is leaving Marie again.
Oh, crazy.
What a crazy concept. He walks in and he's like, hey, I want to talk about this, and nobody else gives a shit.
Oh, let me guess. That was weird. He wants to talk.
And he tries to talk to Abbandando, and she's like, Greg, I'd rather not talk about this. Then he tries to talk to Sipowicz and Simone, and Sipowicz is like, hey, do you want to finish your five so Fancy gets off my dick about it? And then I think Fancy even walks by and goes, hey, Greg, the five. And he has, like, his duffel bag with him. Like, nobody cares, Medavoy, about your problems. They just want you to do your job.
Yeah, because you're being kind of a weirdo.
And in the opening, Sipowicz talks about how Sylvia is going to a procedure that, as he put it, the dope that I am, I thought I got a choice.
Yeah, I don't know what he was trying to, like, portray there.
Well, he's skittish about procedures. That's the whole point of that.
Yeah, I guess.
Fancy gives him a case for a dead woman in Chinatown, and Sipowicz gives the line about talking to Sylvia. It's like talking to a skill, you never know where you stand. And this is NYPD Blue Balls, the Asher Brothers going through every single episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song of NYPD Blue. It's funny how you're never on time with the theme song.
Oh, I know I'm really late.
Right now it's in the... Anyway, that's done. So it's a Chinatown DOA, and they show up on the scene, and the coroner is already there, and he's kind of a douchebag, because he's got a squash game at 10, he says. Or like 5. I forgot. Do I have the quote here?
I don't know. He just had a game, and he was being a dick.
And that's something that one of our listeners, Chris Blank and stuff on Twitter, he mentioned. The medical examiner is, how is he able to schedule a squash game for 10:15? Does he work full-time? A squash game runs 50 minutes to an hour and 30, depending on how good you are. And he doesn't look very fit, so I assume it would take longer. Then he has travel time and shower time. Unless he takes a two-hour lunch, I don't see how he's able to attend these games. Which is a good, it's a decent point. Complaining about a squash game, if a squash game takes 2 hours, then he's basically negligent about his own job. He shows up and he says, 2 stab wounds, victims died shortly after that, and there's no knife on the premises. There's also scratches on the victim's leg, and they're not 100% sure what they were, and they chalked it up to cat scratches because they own a cat.
Yeah.
Because her parents are...
Real quick. Something's bugging me.
Okay.
Isn't that coroner on call? So it's safe to say that maybe he did schedule a squash game, and he's annoyed that it's happening. He's on call, but he has to be there, and he's annoyed that it's happening, so he's trying to speed it up so he can go. You know what I mean? Like, maybe he's not neglecting his job. Maybe he's just on call.
Fair.
Because is it 5 a.m. or 5 p.m.?
Oh, it says 10. He says, like, 10:15, and he doesn't mention AM or PM.
Oh, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, that's a weird move. Also, it also sucks to be a coroner dealing with dead people and then going, like, hey, guys, I got a squash game to get to. Like, can we wrap up this work so I can go do it? And he also mentions, like, oh, a German tourist went down in his soup, and another guy did this, and I've been all over the joint today. It's just been... I'm up to my knees in dead people. And I got a squash game to play. So they go to talk to the parents, who are Chinese immigrants. They talk through a translator, which is the victim's cousin.
Uh-huh.
This storyline essentially plays out where it's a misdirect, because the girl had a diary, which they get out and they hand over to guest star Harold NG, or Nig. I always feel like I say that wrong.
Harold, it's probably Nago.
Well, it's just NG. Harold Nag or...
Whoa, you need to relax there, bud.
Well, that's, we have to worry about that in the next episode, for sure.
You're slipping onto some ground there.
Ng. Well, Harold... Harold NG. And he's a recurring character because every time they need to deal with stuff in Chinatown and they need a Chinese translator, they go get Harold.
Yeah, he's a famous face. He was the dad in Rush Hour.
Absolutely.
Whose kid got stolen. The consulate. Consulate Han.
He is also in Arrival, which I haven't seen, but I've heard is good.
I haven't seen either. Yeah, I heard the same thing. Don't care, though.
But he reads through the diary, and when they interview her friends, it seems like she was really bent out of shape with this breakup she had with her boyfriend, Eddie Wong.
Eddie Wong's a cool dude, man.
And that's another thing. When they interview her friends, they're like, Eddie Wong is just, like, amazing.
Like, yeah, he's a cool motherfucker.
Well, and he's clearly a gangster, but the only friends they talk to were female, and they're all like, oh yeah, but he's such a nice guy. Which
yeah,
it's like...
because he's trying to get in their pants.
You think it's because he was also hitting on her friends at the same time?
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%.
You think Eddie Wong is a coxman, and that's his main goal with her friends?
Oh, 100%. 100%. Like, he may have been, like, getting at her, but he was definitely also trying to leave his options open for later.
So you're saying is a no lady is a Wong lady?
Oh, my God.
Oh, goodness, it's happening. So Eddie Wong is the name that they get.
Never mind.
and they run it
is
down.
Is it so Wong to be so right?
Oh, man, we're going to do that at least 12 more times before this episode's over. They have a conversation with the parents. They mention, oh, she had a boyfriend, we don't like him, he was a bad guy. They look into it. He's a part of the Flying Dragons, which doesn't sound like a really intense gang name to me.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem scary.
The Flying Dragons?
Yeah, it doesn't seem... It seems like I'm watching a... it's like a Ninja Turtle... Like, I'm watching the Ninja Turtle movie. Who was it? Was it Kato?
Yeah, Kato, who's part of the Flying Dragons.
Kato or Kino or whatever his name was. He's, like, helping the Turtles fight the Fighting Dragons or something. I don't know. It just was, like, a really stupid name compared to, like, I don't know.
To me, it sounds like a Pee-wee hockey team.
But then they had to make it super racist. I mean, no offense. But they had to make it, like, they had to be like, oh, like, let's be super offensive.
I guess we should do each case individually as we move forward. With the dead girl case, they find out, oh, he's connected to the Flying Dragons. But there's also all of these hints that it may have been suicide that they just kind of rehash over and over. Everybody says that she was, like, downright depressed after the breakup. Harold reads through the diary, and he goes to Fancy and says, yeah, she seems really, really broken up about this. And Fancy asks him directly, do you think it was a suicide? He says, I don't know. Towards the end of the episode where they meet with Fancy again, Simone says, it looks like the marks on her feet and legs could have been hesitation marks, as if, like, someone who's trying to build up the strength to stab themselves. So what they do is they leverage this...
Yeah, Simone's on top of his shit.
Well, Simone's always on top of his shit.
You have to. It has to go this way because it's a fucking TV show, obviously. Mm-hmm. But if this was real life, at some point, Simone would be like, what the fuck am I... Like, why are you guys still in charge?
Which guys?
Like, I'm constantly having to tell people that, like, this is wrong, this is right. Why am I still only a detective? You know what I mean?
You're talking about just Simone or Sipowicz too?
Sipowicz too. Well, no, I think Sipowicz feels that.
Well, I think Fancy, he proves time and again through different parts of the show that he is a good boss. Especially in the episode after this one.
Maybe it's not his bosses as it is necessarily the people above him, you know?
Yeah, the inspectors and the chief of D's and those assholes.
Yeah.
Those guys are the ones that we don't understand why they keep their jobs.
We understand, because they're white.
Well, I mean, you know, it certainly helps.
Well, it certainly does go help in their favor.
I'm trying to find, because the moment Harold shows up, he shows up with them in the streets to go interview her friends.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to remember the quotes, because he basically gives Sipowicz shit twice. Oh,
yeah.
He shows up and he says, "Hey, how are things going, Sipowicz?" And he's like, "Oh, good." He's like, "Are you still with Sylvia?" He's like, "Yeah, we're about to have a baby." And he goes, "Oh, I hope it looks more like her, right?"
Yeah, he's super funny. He says, like, but he has, like, a funny relationship with Sipowicz. And so, like, I always feel like Sipowicz looks at him as, like, he's one of those good minorities. You know? That's what I feel like he does. Like, so he lets Harold, like, rib him a little bit. Like, he's always like, it's okay. He's one of them good ones, you know?
Forgive,
like, I don't know.
Forgive my language, but you'd feel like Sipowicz would say, "Look, I got no problems with Chinamen." Like, that's something he would say out loud.
Yeah. I got no problem with the Chinese.
And also, Harold has this relationship with Sipowicz where he's like, no, we're good enough friends that I can give you shit. And also, because they get information that it was these specific run-in buddies with Eddie Wong, and they're at this apartment. So they're going to go sting the apartment, and when they do, a guy's getting a lap dance from a topless woman and just pushes her to the side and shoots the door.
Yeah.
Which was kind of hilarious. I don't know why that he has a gun that close to him with lap dancers present.
That's a good point.
Like,
that's a good point. I didn't know where you were going with that, but that's a good point.
Like, I don't know, I'm not a criminal, I don't engage a lot of time in the criminal underworld, but if I was getting private lap dances with my homie, because he was getting his own, which was maybe like 5 feet away in a different chair, I don't know why I'd have my guns so close that if the door were to open, I could just push her to the side and start shooting at the door.
Well, Kirk, where they're probably living, there's probably a lot of drugs and a lot of money, so they're always at risk of being robbed. The Wire would have taught you that if you paid attention.
They're worried about Omar. They're going to hear, yeah, Omar coming. And
oh, no. I don't know what Sipowicz would do if he had to deal with Omar. Like, that would be a good, like, 30-minute discussion.
Omar and Sipowicz? Like, how would they talk to each other?
I think Sipowicz would lose his shit if he could never catch Omar.
But Omar would also be not that bad of a guy. Because, like, if he were to sit down and talk with Sipowicz, Omar is like, "Look, I rob drug dealers because they're terrible people." And
yeah, but Sipowicz is also of the mind of, like, "I get what you're doing, but still there's law."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's definitely very much, I didn't see Civil War, so I don't know Captain America Civil War, so mm-hmm. I don't know who's the more, like, conservative one of the two. But Sipowicz is definitely, like, "I'm not about vigilantes. Like, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this the right way."
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. I don't want to nerd out too hard in Civil War, because there's enough of those out there.
Very much Daredevil and the Daredevil-Punisher relationship.
Exactly.
Which was, by the way, Daredevil and Punisher are pretty good TV shows.
I gotta watch them. I gotta start watching them.
I really like that, real quick. I really like the Walking Dead dude as Punisher. He does a really good job.
Which is good, because I a lot of people were worried and giving it shit. Because they did not trust that he could do a good job, but
he's really funny when he needs to be, but he's at the same time very scary. Anyways, we'll keep it on MIP. But
yeah, the way this story shakes out is they get these guys at this apartment, which I just read in my notes. Now they got it out of the girl's diary, Katie Chow. They bring the guys in and they say, "Hey, we have you for shooting at cops. We have you for drug possession. We have you for illegal arms possession. You just need to tell us where Eddie Wong is, because we have reason to believe he was involved in a murder."
Yeah.
So, they then get the information on an illegal gambling ring, and they do this bitchin' scene where Harold goes up to talk to the guy, and then just, like, straight, like, Metal Gear Solids him against the door.
Yeah.
And then they all go in and shut the place down. But
that's another reason why, I mean, this is nerdy, but it's probably another reason why I think Sipowicz likes him, is because, like, he is a real cop, you know, and he'll actually, like, get his hands dirty and, like, go up there and, like, be confrontational and shit.
Also, something I noticed, why did they cut the table? Is that standard procedure with cops, that they cut the table with a saw?
It It's a roulette table.
Uh-huh.
So it has that spinning thing on one end.
Uh-huh.
And so if you cut it and then, one, you can't use it again, and those are expensive. Back in that time, it's, like, expensive to get. And also, like, if you're buying one, people are going to be like, what are you buying it for? Like, are you, like, you know, and it kind of raises red flags and shit.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, I think if once you cut it, even if you were to, like, fix it, you know, you get someone who's, like, a carpenter who fixes it, I still think it messes up the validity of the table because, it has fallen and messes up the spinning of the roulette. So it essentially becomes worthless.
Okay.
That's what I'm assuming. You know what I mean? Especially if you're gambling, you want everything to be, like, fair and square when it comes to roulette and the ball spinning correctly and all that shit. So, I mean, that would be my guess. I don't know.
Because it definitely seemed like a choice that they've made specifically. Like, we have to cut the table. Like, cutting maybe the table is something that's got to happen. And it's
well, maybe there's also rules by, like, the state of New York where, like, if someone buys a roulette table, they have to explain, like, what they're using it for. Because you, like, can't gamble in your home.
Yeah.
And so maybe if you're buying, like, a roulette table, it raises red flags and shit. And so they like, snuck it in. So, I don't know. I have no fucking idea. These are all just guesses based off of the things I learned on TV.
They get a chance to talk to Freddie Wong. And Freddie Wong is played by Philip Moon, who is a famous face. He was Wu in The Big Lebowski.
Oh, shit, he was.
Yeah.
He was also in Deadwood.
Yeah, he's also. I saw that he was also in Deadwood, too. So he's a Bochco, well, Milch. He's a Milch alumni. But when I saw his face, I was like, oh, shoot, I definitely know that dude from somewhere, and he's in The Big Lebowski. There is a lot of Big Lebowski alums in this show. It's fantastic.
He plays a mean dude on Deadwood, though.
Because, yeah, I haven't watched Deadwood, even though you told me I need to, like, 1,000 times.
Oh, my God. You're, like, especially if they're making two. I read they're doing, like, two-hour Deadwood specials.
Mm-hmm.
If HBO's bringing it back to do it. If they do it, you need to watch the seasons, because, fuck God, it's so good.
He is also
good. Sorry.
According to IMDb, he was also in True Detective and The Joy Luck Club, for all of you fans of that movie.
I had to read The Joy Luck Club. The book was pretty rad. I read it at community college, so I like how he makes a character. That's what I really like about this show, is you get to see a lot of actors make their own characters and, like, what they would do with it and, like, how good they are. Like, I felt like he was really good as, like, a dick thug.
And he does the interview where they talk to him and they say, like, he said, hey, you guys are really jamming me up here. And Sipowicz says, oh, I'm going to have to take a sleeping pill so I don't lie awake at night. And then they compare him to OJ because he says, I didn't do anything to my girlfriend. He's like, oh, so you're out there looking for the killer, OJ? Like, they drop some fun lines on him. And he said he's going to get killed. And he said, well, how do you think the people in Rikers are going to honor you by turning your ass into chop suey? And they have enough reason to believe that it's a suicide, so instead they try to get him to flip on some bowling alley shootings.
Yeah.
Because the flying...
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about the bowling alley and this huge shooting that went down.
And because the flying dragons don't talk. To quote Sipowicz, next to these guys, the Goombas are loudmouths.
So dramatic.
And that's something that Chris Blankenstuff on Twitter, he complained about how he felt the process of this case was kind of ridiculous because everything they needed to know to show that it was a suicide was there, and they wasted a lot of time just so that they could get convictions on this other case. But, I mean, that's kind of the point of the show.
The point of detectives. Okay, great. They know it's a suicide, but if they know that they can find out more information about something that they're already looking into, like, it would be against the, like, nature of their job to ignore the ability to get the new information. You get what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And he made a point that I agreed with. They didn't really look too hard into the parents or the cousin, because the cousin was like really stone-faced about the entire scenario, and then he just volunteered to be translator. So for half a second, I thought this episode was gonna be, oh, the cousin had something to do with it, but he's basically blocking the parents from talking to them.
Yeah.
And then once Harold talks to them, he's gonna be like, oh no, it was the cousin. And then all that would just come tumbling down. But they then have a conversation with the parents, and there was a quick moment with Harold when he saw him walk into the squad, and he goes, hey, can I bring him into the room? Like, he tried to cut off the conversation with Fancy to go help him out. That, and then the scene where Harold's translating for them to the detectives. Harold, as a character, is so good because he is a great cop. Even when he's yelling at the guys in the apartment after they get caught, and Simone is doing the, hey, you let them know that we got them for this, so they better start acting right and being cooperative, and then he's translating. And then when he translates in the room, it shows that he's a good cop and really helpful with these people that are victims, as well as fighting against these criminals. Like, it's kind of a bummer that he's only in it every once in a while. Like, it would be better if we kind of could switch him out for, oh, I don't know, Lesniak. Or almost anybody other than Simone Sipowicz, maybe Russell.
Yeah. No, I really like him. I think maybe that's why we like him so much, is because they don't use him as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's the same way why I really like all the informants. I've talked about that numerous times. And there's a like good informant in the later years that I really like, and then they use him a lot. I think they use him like 3 or 4 episodes in a row. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give away too much, but like, when they do, I ended up not liking him. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, I get it. Like, I'm okay with this. Like, but yeah, I really like him. I think he's a really good cop. And I think that's why him and Sipowicz have such a good relationship, too.
And you also liked Mike Roberts, even though Mike Roberts is like a scumbag.
Yeah. He shows up. And another thing is, a lot of the times when you hear on the show, when like, they'll be like, oh, we'll call this person for help, Sipowicz always has a smart ass comment to say.
Mm hmm.
But when they call him, he never says anything.
No, of course not.
They say Harold, and he's like, okay.
This story ends with a very awesome scene where Harold's translating the parents and Simone and Sipowicz, and it comes out that the girl did kill herself, and the dad hid the knife.
Because it's a shame on
the family and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the dad was played by Raymond Ma, who was in Old School and Lethal Weapon 4.
I'm gonna be honest. I think I may have seen the first Lethal Weapon. I don't know if I've ever seen a Lethal Weapon after that.
I found the Lethal Weapon series on Blu-ray for like $10 at Best Buy. So I bought them and watched all of them. There's a reason why the Always Sunny stuff is fantastic, and it's because of the original Lethal Weapons.
God damn, Always Sunny. Oh my god. Anyway. No, I've seen him before in other things. I know. I saw him in The Muppets. I saw him. He's a character actor. He's been in a lot of different things. Anyways, yeah.
So that's wrapped up. We got two more storylines. One of them includes Mackenzie Phillips and a guy named Rob LaBelle playing a married couple. Mackenzie Phillips, she was in the news fairly recently for some uncool things that happened with her family.
She did a lot of drugs back in the day, right?
Yeah.
And then didn't, like she have a lot of sex with, like, family members or something like that?
Yeah, I don't know the specifics, but that's what I understand about that. But if she is a famous face, she is from One Day at a Time.
Uh-huh.
And if you're from my generation, the fantastic Disney Channel original So Weird.
That's right. I was trying to remember what fucking Disney TV show she thinks she was on.
Yeah, that starred a bunch of people that didn't really go anywhere, and Eric Von Denton. And that story works where she's a woman bound to a wheelchair, and a gentleman came up to the door, flashed a badge, and said they had to talk to her, then came in and hit her and robbed the place.
Yeah.
It turns out that that happened because her husband was, you know, seeing a prostitute weekly, and may have mentioned that his wife's in a wheelchair, and so she called her pimp and organized the break-in.
Yeah, to break into those rich people's house, yeah.
The really cool part of that storyline is the guy gives them that information hoping that'll be the only thing that they need to find the guy, and they can keep his indiscretion under wraps. And it turns out that they come back to the house when the wife starts complaining about how she doesn't feel safe. And he flips a bitch in the house going, "Don't you understand that rent control apartments aren't easy to find?"
Yeah, he's being a real asshole, and then Martinez has to step in, right?
And Martinez, like, for the first time, really dresses down this dude.
Yeah, since he's been back.
Yeah. Because, like, the episode, and the other funny thing was they do a sting on the prostitute, and the prostitute's like, "I don't want to discuss money until you get naked, and to prove you're not a cop." And then James kind of talks his way out of it until she does. And then she says, "I knew you were a cop." And then James kind of gives this line of like, "Yeah, but you couldn't resist, huh?"
Yeah. Sticks it to her.
And what's weird is like, the other part of the storyline is he has to work with Lesniak. And we're in the middle of this storyline where she doesn't know if she's gay or not.
Oh, yeah. She's still bringing that around.
So she has this like, this look at Martinez where it's like, "Oh yeah, typical man." But I didn't take that as what James was saying. I didn't think of him going, "Yeah, because I'm such a man, you couldn't resist." I thought he was saying, "Because you're a prostitute, and this is how you make your money, you couldn't resist." I didn't think he was making a sexual point. I thought he was making like a...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I agree with you, 100%.
But I think Lesniak took it as like, yeah, big typical man, his dick is the most important thing in the world, when he's like...
Yeah, I think so too. I agree with you on that.
But James is just...
As we'll learn later, she overreacts a lot.
Yeah, to basically everything. So they get her to confess that she talked to a pimp about it, and it was really weird because in that interview, he basically says, "Hey, so, yeah, that woman, he beat her and raped her and stole," which isn't the truth.
Yeah.
Then mentions that she's near death, and that if she does die, the dude will get the chair, and so will her. Which is like, no offense to her, if she wasn't a prostitute, and like, thought logically, that doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, that's real deep. There's a lot going on.
So, and I think there was moments in the interview, which I think made it a pretty good acting scene, where Lesniak responds of like, "Okay, I think you're going too hard." And she tries to like reel it back, but then he goes even harder. So she tries to give her more lifeboats, good cop, bad cop scenario. And it was a decent interview. But I say all that, wasting everyone's time, to get to the point where James is straight yelling at this guy.
Yeah.
And said, don't make us your beards. And he says one of my favorite lines in the episode, "Do whatever you want on the street. When you're in this building, act like a man."
Yeah.
And
the guy's being a dick to the woman.
Yeah, because he's like, "Oh, you don't feel safe? Well, you do realize like rent-controlled apartments don't fall out of the sky." And it's like, motherfucker, bitch is in a wheelchair. And she got beaten by a random person and then robbed.
Because of you.
Because of you fucking around on prostitutes. Like, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the most fucked up part about it is, like, I just remember as soon as he, like, gave her that shit, I was just like, hey, I was like, dude, you're the one that got her fucked over. Like, what are we talking about? You know? Like, I don't know.
Also, that dude is also a famous face. The guy who played the husband is Rob LaBelle, who was in the movie Watchmen, for some of those that enjoy that film. I knew him from somewhere, and it turned out to be The Watchmen, which, not the best movie, but
a decent. How do you feel about them making a TV show?
I'm okay with it, but I also heard Zack Snyder was involved, and that makes me not okay with it.
Yeah, but is he involved now with this whole, like, daughter thing going happening?
I don't know. I like the idea, much like the new It, I really liked, but after reading the book, I think the only way you can make it as good as the book is to do a miniseries. I think that's the only thing you can do with the Watchmen movie.
Yeah, that's what I was, after finally reading it, I was, yeah, you can't do a movie.
It's too long.
You have to cut it up into, the chapters of the comic book itself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how you do it. But anyways, but yeah, I'm excited for it. But yeah, he was Wally Weaver in
the new Watchmen.
The Watchmen, yeah, he was cool. He's been in a lot of other things as a character actor. He was in X-Files. I saw him a couple times in that. Stuff like that. Yeah, he's cool.
That storyline with James and Lesniak kind of ends with two very strange conversations where he says, basically, James kind of goes, so what, are you gay or are you not? Because I've been hearing you're not gay, and you just told me that you were gay, so I'd stop talking to you. Which, in and of itself, is fucked up, but it's also fucked up to go, hey, are you gay or are you not? But Lesniak is also very confused and kind of annoying at this point.
I know, Kirk, but why can't, like, she just be herself and he leave her alone?
Oh, no, I don't disagree with that. And I think the ending of this episode where it's just like, oh, no, they have a coffee date at her place is very inappropriate and weird, and I didn't like it at all. But I liked the other thing much less, which the third storyline is Marie shows up to give Greg his bag because he took the wrong bag.
He took his daughter's bag.
Which is the most Metavoy thing that could have happened. Instead of taking his clothes, he took his daughter's skating bag. And Marie decides to have an open discussion with Abbandando in a place of work. They have a battle of words in the coffee room. Donna fights back with, oh, what were you doing with the bag boy? And she yells out, the assistant manager, which was hilarious.
Yeah.
The part where she says, oh, are you going to do a life advice column, advice from a whore?
That was actually a pretty good comeback. I had respect for that.
It was very uncomfortable and weird. And it's also very strange to see Abbandando go like, look, I ain't even touching Greg. Greg is not in my wheelhouse anymore. So he's leaving you because you suck.
Yeah.
Like, that was an amazing point where it's like, no, he's leaving you because of you. He's not leaving you because of me.
Yeah, he doesn't like you.
Yeah, because let's be honest, you're kind of a shrew and a bitch, and you're annoying. And you had sex with the assistant manager of a grocery store. At least Metavoy, like, traded up.
And Metavoy waited to have sex until after, you know?
Yeah. And then the scene that confused me and horrified me, Marie shows up to the crib where Greg is going to spend the night, starts doing some couples therapy exercises with him, then drops her overcoat, revealing some mom lingerie, and then they start fucking in the public crib of his workplace.
Yeah, which is weird.
Yeah, didn't like it very much. Didn't like it very much at all. And I don't really know what to say other than that. It was weird. It was also really awkward.
Yeah. It was, It just kind of shows that they shouldn't be together.
Yeah, it was bad. Let me see if there's anything that I want to mention. Oh, I think the title of this episode should be The Flying Dragons, because that's just hilarious.
Yeah, that would have been a better one. Or like a funny like pun that include flying dragons or something, you know?
The lying dragons.
It's so stupid, but it's good.
The lying. Let me see if Chris has got any other notes that. Yeah, Chris just kept mentioning he's so surprised that they didn't just know that it was a suicide much earlier.
It could have been like Eddie and the Flying Dragons, so it's like a play on
Eddie and the Lying Dragons.
Eddie and the Lying Dragons or something. So it's like a play on old timey rock and roll band names and shit.
We didn't mention that Andy found out he's having a boy.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Sylvia Andy situation, he doesn't end up going, but after the procedure she mentions that she's having a boy. It does have the moment where Andy doesn't know that the ultrasound doesn't mean they go into her vagina, which was hilarious.
It's crazy how oblivious he is of certain things.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's so smart and so dumb at the same time.
Yeah, 100% agree.
The other line was James and Greg, and James asks, I was wondering, what was it like being with Donna? Greg says, imagine the best experience you've ever had, and now double it.
That's such a Medavoy answer.
Also, no offense, Medavoy, I'm pretty sure James' experiences have been better than yours.
I don't know, he's going after Lesniak.
Yeah, that's a weird move. Also, James being smooth is, like, painful to watch. Because, like, in the car, he's like, I like it when you laugh. I'm going to make you laugh all the time. And I was like, ew?
Yeah, and the way he delivers it's bad. Yeah, he's very clunky and, like, it's just not good.
It's not the best. It also, something else that Chris said that I noticed, too, Russell's not in this episode at all.
Yeah, they don't talk to her at all.
Russell is not around. And they end the show on Medavoy and Marie and James and Lesniak, which is like that's not a good ender.
Like, yeah, that's not a good way to go.
Especially because you had Harold in this episode. You had Harold. You could have had a moment with him and Sipowicz, and they chose to go with them. So,
yeah. I mean, it wasn't like the best episode, but it was good.
Anything else you'd like to say about it before we go? Just it's good, not the best.
No, I'm good.
We're definitely in the good run of episodes in NYPD Blue. And
this one was a little like but I mean, like you said, they gotta change it up, make it a little different. They always have one of these shows where they just like slip in a different one every now and then,
and they bring back Harold, and it is kind of a cool way to explore the idea of like Chinese people in New York, because they do that where they like to go to different cultures within New York. And Harold is a cool connective tissue to that, and sometimes those episodes are just really cool. And so I dug it, but like the way they ended it and the stuff they did with Lesniak and yeah,
it's just weird. Like I don't know, maybe I don't know if it's like they just didn't know how to go about it. Like they didn't know how to explain the whole gay situation well enough, but it just feels very weird.
Well, every single episode of NYPD Blue Balls is available at AstroBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and where you find a podcast. We're on Twitter at AstroBrosPod, Instagram AstroBrothersPodcast. And as of right now, it is not on Hulu. Hulu has bought it. We're just waiting for them to put it up. I'm strongly considering asking our 12 listeners to start petitioning for them to put it up, because what the hell? At this point, we're going to be done with this entire show before they get their head out of their ass and just put it up. So, yeah.
Like, I just don't understand. I don't understand the, like, marketing plan behind it, or it's just not a
priority.
Because it's kind of like, are you holding on to it to, like, surprise us? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, like.
Are they waiting for a really, really down time to be like, hey, do you want to try watching NYPD Blue? And it's like, well, I don't think that'll work either. I think you just put it up, and our show will maybe get, like, two more listeners, and you'll get free advertising on our show, even though I'm sure people who listen to our show already know about Hulu. So, I don't know. I'm saying,
I don't know. I just want to watch it. Like, yeah, that's all.
I just want to watch it. I want to watch it without changing out discs. Later, everybody. Enjoy. thanks once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. There's no point in making them unless you're listening. Thank you once again. If you need more NYPD Blue fix, because as of editing time, it is not on Hulu. NYPD Blue is not there. You can check out Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, on Amazon. It's 99 cents. Get it so you can read a little bit about the best show ever, NYPD Blue. If you have the time, go and rate and review our show on iTunes, even if you don't think it's good. I read them. I take your constructive criticism very seriously. Thank you. Have a good day. Be good to yourself and each other. Peace.